that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend, especially all you moms out there on this Mother's Day weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. The Matador Motel in Chico is the place to go today and tomorrow for one of the biggest arts events of the season, Art at the Matador, featuring nearly 100 visual artists plus performing artists, including musicians and fire dancers. On today's program, we'll be talking with some of those participants in Art at the Matador. We'll also be visiting Chico's Blue Room Theater to talk with the director and a couple of the actors from the play by David Mamet, Glengarry Glen Ross, about a group of cutthroat salesmen competing with each other at a shady real estate company. And we'll be hearing from Maestro Scott Seaton, conductor of the North State Symphony. He'll tell us about the orchestra's concert this weekend in both Chico and Redding. That's coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Maul with the North State Arts Calendar.
In Redding, Riverfront Playhouse presents The Laramie Project, a documentary play based on interviews of community members reacting to the hate crime murder of university student Matthew Shepard because he was gay. Performances are tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 and Sunday at 2. At the Orland Arts Center, tomorrow is the final day of the exhibit Dancing to Different Tunes, artwork by mother-daughter duo Pat Vogt and Allison Mucci. The center's open tomorrow from 1 to 6. Tonight, at Chico's Downtown Plaza, the Friday night concert welcomes local favorite Big Mo and the Full Moon Band. The blues and funk start at 7 o'clock. Also tonight, at the university's Zing Recital Hall, four members of the Chico State Guitar Ensemble evoke the sights, sounds, and flavors of Spain with the music of Federico Moreno Toroba. The full guitar ensemble concludes the concert with a piece by Isaac Albanez. The music begins at 7:30. Tomorrow, at Chico Paper Company, meet pen and ink artist Jesse Smith and see his architectural drawings of Chico locations. He'll be at the Paper Company, 345 Broadway, from 2 to 5 tomorrow. At Yuba City's Acting Company, An Inspector Calls, the classic British crime thriller. It's on stage tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 with a Sunday matinee at 2. That's the calendar for this week. Today is the birthday of surrealist painter and outsized personality Salvador Dali. There is only one difference between a madman and me, Dali noted. The madman thinks he's sane. I know I'm mad.
Matador Motel is a Chico landmark with its Spanish-inspired architecture and its artistic tile work. Today and tomorrow, it's hosting an event called Art at the Matador. It features nearly 100 artists showing their creations, a wide array of different types of art.
This is Dolores Mitchell. I'm speaking with participants in Art at the Matador that is going to start at 4 p.m. today. Let's talk to Jana Lawton, part of the Matador Planning Committee and herself a participating artist. Jana, give us a kind of overview of what people can expect.
Art at the Matador is a living gallery. So we have taken over the Matador Motel on the Esplanade, and we have booths, food, music. There are rooms in the Matador where artists create these special little interesting venues for their own artwork. A two-day affair, there's something happening at all times.
What are you going to be showing, Jana?
I'm a ceramic artist, and my husband is a metal sculptor. We have a tiny little sculpture garden to show David's sculptures. I've created a boulangerie to show my hand-painted porcelain and stoneware bowls. We're creating a little Parisian side street.
Are all the artists who are showing in rooms going to have a theme?
It's really up to the artists, but a lot of us like the opportunity to do something a little bit unusual to showcase our work, something that shows what we do in a more interesting way.
I'm going to turn now to Pat Kosas, also a ceramist.
I'm going to be in a booth outside with all the other booth artists. I am doing some clay, a bunch of functional tableware accessories that are kind of fun with lots of decoration, polka dots and such. Things that you could serve your bread on or a salad, things that would accentuate your table but not replace your dinnerware.
I'd like to ask you about the variety of art that'll be shown. You're very familiar with that because you've been taking in the applications of nearly 100 artists.
We have a wide variety of arts. We have photography, collage, jewelry, feather kinds of creations, mixed media, wood turning, gourd art, glass garden art, assemblages, collages. A wide variety of paintings and different kinds of media, watercolors, acrylic paintings, oil paintings. A lot of 2D flat art will be at the Matador.
Dolores, you are showing art yourself. What kinds of things will we see from you?
All small paintings. That's because I can keep the prices modest, and also they're small enough to fit almost anywhere.
Well, you can meet Dolores and all the other artists in their various rooms and booths. It's all part of Art at the Matador going on tonight and all day tomorrow.
Pat, what do you think this yearly event means to the art community and also to the larger Chico community?
It's a really important event. As an artist, we don't have many opportunities to exhibit our work in such a wonderful setting. It's kind of the premier event for artists in our area now, as well as for the larger community to meet the artists and be exposed to the different kinds of art we do, performing arts, fire dancers, ballet dancers, different types of artists, clay and weavers spinning yarn. It's just a great opportunity for all of us to strut our stuff.
One other thing we should talk about is all the activities that are available to people in addition to looking at art and hearing music.
We have a fairy door hunt for the kids or, you know, the young at heart, so to speak. We have our penny machine, which we have every year. You can get your own penny stamped with the Art at the Matador logo.
A lot of the nonprofits will have things for people to do. The Chico Arts Center will have a graffiti board where people can make their marks. We have alternate reality glasses. Put them on and see what it's like to be in a different reality.
That's from Butte College.
Mm-hmm.
I have here a representative, William Mobley. For the first time, we're having a student sale from Chico State University.
To give these students a chance to get out of Chico State's many galleries, which are amazing, and be able to sell to the public.
What will you be showing, William?
Lithographs, etchings, and woodcuts.
We have not just visual artists, but we have some performing artists taking part in this Art at the Matador event. We have Deborah Yoritsma. She heads up the Chico Community Ballet. So you're going to have some ballerinas at the event?
We are. We've been a part of this for the last 2 years. This will be our third, and we're going to have a booth out at the event that'll be showcasing everything from some of our tutus to some of the different productions we've done. We're also going to be promoting Cinderella, which we'll be performing in November of this year. And we're going to bring out a bunch of our dancers who will be in tutus. Ah.
Will attendees see ballerinas circulating around?
They will. The ballerinas that will be circulating around will be providing some activities. Children can take selfies with some of the ballerinas. And we're looking at doing some other activities, along with selling some yummy desserts.
Also in the performing art category, we have a couple of women here who are part of a troupe that plays with fire, Rachel Libby and Leandra Metoyer. They call their group the Luma Ninjas. They're one of the most popular events. One of you describe what the Luma Ninjas do.
We're a group of performers, all from Chico at the moment, and we get together to do performances on fire.
Performances with fire, what does that mean?
There's different tools, or we call them toys or props. There's staff. Rachel does double staff. Rope dart, which is a Kevlar on the end of chain you throw back and forth. Poi on two chains. And we have a nunchuck and fire breather. So everyone has individual props they like.
So to really show off this fire art, I guess you start your performance after the sun goes down.
Right at sunset, usually.
How did you get into this, playing with fire?
I grew up studying dance, and then I saw fire dancing, and I thought, I need to learn how to do that.
Well, Rachel, how did you get into this throwing around things that are on fire?
I saw a performance at the Women's Center. I was captivated by it.
Is part of the appeal of this for you that there's some danger involved? Because we're talking about fire, throwing it through the air.
There's an understanding from the crowd that it's a little dangerous, so there's this fascination and respect immediately. It really makes you concentrate. You really get into a state where you're intent on what you're doing, and you're in this heightened state of awareness and concentration, which is a really interesting state to perform in.
How many people are in the Luma Ninja troupe altogether?
About 10 core people right now.
Well, for both of you, what's the most fascinating and attention-drawing thing about the Luma Ninja act?
We have a fire breather. That's always really impressive.
Who actually shoots fire from their mouth?
That's probably the real attention grabber.
But you never know what's going to happen. We try to have a variety of performances. We have some group pieces and some solos.
The Luma Ninjas, fire jugglers. Leandro, when do the Luma Ninjas perform?
We will go on about 8:30 tonight.
One night only. They don't perform tomorrow, so tonight's your chance, everybody, to see the very unique Luma Ninjas at Art at the Matador. That multifaceted art event today and tonight, and then all day tomorrow.
Art at the Matador in Chico, right on the Esplanade between 9th and 10th Avenues, tonight from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., and also Saturday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., with plenty of parking nearby at the Chico Nut Company. You can come and spend the whole day. You can eat there. There is going to be a taco truck, and there's a bar with margaritas and live music. A wonderful event for the entire family, and just in time for Mother's Day.
Money don't get everything, is true, but what it don't get, I can't use. I need money. That's what I want.
A group of ruthless salesmen want to sell dubious real estate in the play currently at Chico's Blue Room Theater.
Glengarry Glen Ross by David Mamet. We'll start with the director. This is Amber Miller. I was thinking about how that desperation of the salesman, very basic thing about the American character, as was underlined years before with Death of a Salesman in the middle of the 20th century, you know. I think these guys are really on the edge of desperation in this play.
personally, I feel like any job that is based on commission brings out the worst in humans. Sorry, whoever is on commission, but I feel actually it's not a healthy way for people to earn a livelihood.
Well, these characters are really at each other's throats, even though they pretend to be friendly with each other. Do you think that ruthlessness is something that spread after this time that it set in the 1980s and became even more at the core of our culture?
I think any job that breeds competition and not support or collaboration will do that. It's a commission-based sales force where they're putting your name on a board and you're humiliated if you're not there. So there's not going to be any kind of collaboration. There's not going to be a lot of ensemble or support. So yeah, I mean, it's just that kind of outlook on labor and a job and employment is going to bring out, I think, the worst in everybody.
Now we have Joe Hilsey. He has one of the main roles in Glengarry Glen Ross. You know, looking at your character, Shelley Levine, I was put in mind of Willie Loman from Death of a Salesman, because you have that desperation and that looking nostalgically toward the past as, you know, the good times. What do you think it is that Shelley Levine has lost and that he's desperate about now?
He does like to talk about the old days, and he likes to talk about his accomplishments. He lives on his past accomplishments and something that's escaping him now. He's not able to close the deals the way he used to. He's gotten old. He's been doing this for all of his life, and he's slowing down, and he's tiring, as happens to all of us. He just is living with that and desperately wanting things to change. He keeps making all sorts of excuses. His biggest excuse is just that it's just bad luck. Luck runs in streaks, and he's on a bad streak, and it's going to turn around. He is definitely very much like Willie Loman, someone who just basks in the glories of his past and doesn't like where he is right now, and just wishes that it could just happen, and that he had that energy and that fire and that passion for sales that he once had.
Joe, I know you've done so many different kinds of roles, from Shakespeare to the most modern plays. What is it like specifically for you to do David Mamet and that kind of dialogue?
Oh, well, it's fantastic. The thing that draws me to Mamet more than anything else is the language. And it's coarse and it's brutal. When these Mamet plays were first coming out, it was quite shocking at the time. And it's kind of lost some of that shock value, the language. But it just is a wonderful poetry. The guy knows rhythm like no other person in the world. Using this language that sounds coarse, but just making this thing that is so, when you speak it, the feeling in your mouth and the feeling in your body when you're speaking David Mamet, it is like no other. It just seems right, and you just can get on a rhythm. You can just ride this language like a wave, and it's very much like Shakespeare, and that when you get Shakespeare and you get the language right and you got the poetry right, once you find it and you can ride it and it just goes along, it gets to the point where it's effortless. David Mamet is so much hard work to get this patter down. But when you do, and it's working, you know that you have it because it just feels right and you can just ride it and it's smooth. And so it's like few other writers who pay that much attention to the sounds of what are happening and the rhythms of what are happening and the tone of what is happening. It really is quite a wonder when you get deep into the script just to see how it's structured and just how perfect it is.
Now I'm talking with Sean Galloway. He plays Tony Roma, one of the main shark salesmen. So what's it like being a big-time shark?
It's written well. You know, you're following the script. But in the past, I've had some experience doing sales. Not great experience, but I've worked in a similar situation like this where there was a board on the wall and guys are looking at their names on the board and you're talking about leads. It's a pressure-filled world, you know, and the play is so well-written. And once you kind of get into it, you kind of feel where the guy needs to be. He's at the top of his game right now. He's hot. He's the hot streak. He's the hot hand. You get that opportunity to be a super overconfident, cocky character, all those things. Doing Mamet's a lot of hard work, but I've enjoyed this process immensely.
I think the relationship between your character and Shelley Levine,
the character played by Joe, is interesting because your character could just be dismissive of him because you're the top dog now and he's kind of the has-been, but it seems like you're on his side in a way.
The way that it's written, what I gleaned from it is that Levine has taught Roma kind of what he knows, right? Because we have some lines in there that we talk about, like, you taught me. Like, I'm kind of protective of him a little bit throughout the script. There's a couple of spots where I feel like I'm being a little bit protective of him, you know, along the way. So he's kind of my ally. But ultimately, you know, in the end, these guys all kind of have at each other regardless. There's very little ethics in this play. And I think that's one of the things that Mamet brings out. What's the most important is what numbers are on the board every single month. Who's at the top? When you're at the top, you get the best leads, right? That's how this game works. And so everybody's ready to just, you know, screw each other over to do whatever it takes to get the top name on the board. I've enjoyed so much working with Joe. You know, I've known Joe for quite a while, probably 30 years now. Him and I met in Ashland at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival when we worked there many, many years ago. There's been some moments on stage that I've had with Joe that are super memorable, and this is definitely one of them. The character of Levine that he portrays is just amazing. So heartfelt, so heart-wrenching. And with everybody else as well. I mean, you know, everybody was killing it, especially tonight. We had a great show tonight. Tonight was, you know, of course, we ramped up all the way through the week to get the show open and everything, and tonight was kind of the ultimate best show we put on. And everybody backstage felt it, and I think the audience felt it as well. I dig the character of Levine the way, and I certainly dig the way that Joe plays that role. And on stage, I think Roma and Levine kind of have that connection. But, you know, ultimately Roma kind of turns on him in the end.
So what do you think an audience in the year 2018 will get from attending this play? This play that was written in 1984, but still really sings in a way.
Like with any good theater or good drama, which, you know, it's the human interaction that's going to draw you in, that's going to take you along, you know, good writing, a good story, the human interaction, whether it's good or bad. And this one has both. It's got some funny stuff. There's some cute stuff. There's some, I don't want to call it tragic, but, you know, there's some deeper emotions in this play, especially with a character like Levine, when you see what happens. With any good drama, it's going to be the story that's going to carry you along.
Sean Galloway, who is one of the actors in Glengarry Glen Ross. It plays tonight and tomorrow night, and then it plays one more weekend at the Blue Room Theater in downtown Chico. The North State Symphony Orchestra has its final concert of the season this weekend in both Chico and Redding. My guest is Scott Seaton, the conductor of the North State Symphony. The big event, the Fifth Symphony from Tchaikovsky, but we have a couple of courses before. Tell me a little bit about the Glinka.
I felt like this was an appropriate concert for that. When I really started studying the piece, I was looking for random conductors, and I came across this video of one of my favorite conductors, Valery Gergiev. The video shows the fingers of the double basses while the overture is playing, and it literally looks like they're moving so fast that they are going to fly off the instrument. He just writes the music so incredibly swiftly and quickly. You just have to be there to see it live to get the full effect.
So it packs a lot of music into a short space.
So many notes, almost too many notes, as Mozart would say.
And then you're following that up with an Elgar piece, a cello concerto. And you have a guest performer on that one.
Evan Kahn is a cellist, a brilliant younger cellist that I first worked with last year with the Viridian Symphony in Yuba City. He did Haydn with me then, and we had such a great time together that I invited him to show off his incredible skills with the North State Symphony. It's just going to be a very powerful performance by a cellist that in 10 years is going to be huge. He just finished his master's. He's going to be a huge name, and we're excited to have his talents with us.
And tell me a little bit about the Elgar piece.
I assume that it really shows off the cello.
It goes from these wandering, sort of soul-searching melodic lines to some very fast, uplifting, very uniquely orchestrated moments. It's a great piece, in my opinion, more of a rhapsody for cello, because it just kind of searches and it finds these emotions and it starts to exploit them, echo them, and amplify them.
I guess the big event is going to be the Tchaikovsky Fifth Symphony. What made you want to go out of your season with that piece?
When I was originally programming the season, I actually wanted to do his sixth and final symphony, but it ends very, very darkly. The end of that symphony is just like the basses have this peculiar pulse. It's like the heart rate. Mm-hmm. It's just the only thing that exists, and it keeps slowing down, and then it stops. That symphony is essentially Tchaikovsky saying goodbye. I thought to myself, with the North State Symphony, we have four concerts a season, and I don't think I can end with that piece of music. Okay, well, if we can't do the six, or if it wouldn't be feasible to do the six, the fifth is the next best. All of his later symphonies deal with similar issues, especially that of fate.
Your subtitle for this concert is, mm-hmm. As Fate Would Have It. That sounds like it has a real mythic dimension to it.
It's a powerful issue, and it's a very personal issue, especially for Tchaikovsky. You know, he was going through a lot, tortured with his sexuality, living where he did in Russia in that particular time period. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a very pleasant life for the most part.
Yeah.
This symphony, like his fourth symphony, takes everything gathered from his early mentors, from the symphonies of Beethoven, even the similar idea of fate knocking at the door. The opening sounds you hear are the quote-unquote fate motive.
What gives Tchaikovsky's symphonies their punch?
He is 100% a composer of melody. Some people's qualms with Tchaikovsky is that because he creates such intricate melodies, sometimes it's hard to develop and expand those melodies. Mm. People think that he takes these melodies and he beats you over the head with it until you can't take it any longer. But that's not necessarily a bad thing.
You've been rehearsing this for weeks. Have you felt that these melodies are overdone in your mind?
Well, no, they're not. You will certainly leave the concert singing one of his melodies because they can't help but detach themselves on a very personal basis, especially the primary melody in the second movement of the piece, which is just one of the most gorgeous, soaring, elongated things that you will first hear introduced by our principal horn player, probably one of the most famous melodies in all of the repertoire.
The North State Symphony. They're performing tomorrow night at Laxon Auditorium on the Chico State campus, and that concert starts at 7:30. Something's happening an hour before the concert starts at 6:30. What's that?
Before every Masterworks concert, I give a pre-concert talk where I take you on the important tidbits of what to listen for throughout the concert. So I highly recommend attending that.
They move up to the Cascade Theater in Reading for Sunday's performance. The music starts at 2 o'clock, and the pre-concert talk is at 1 o'clock. Time to enjoy some music. Thanks, Scott, for coming in and talking about it.
Thank you, Tom.
All of us here at Weekend Showcase wish you a wonderful Mother's Day. We encourage you to take your mother to one of the great arts events right here in the North State. And that's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. If you ever miss this program at its regular broadcast time, you can hear it online anytime after 3:30 Friday at mynspr.org. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio. Thank you.